Is it too scary to say out loud?
So there's this weird horror movie from the 70s called Tourist Trap. And the villain in it is played by Chuck Connors of The Rifleman.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting that you recognize that right away. And in fact, whenever we watch stuff where the in-joke is that the person's a famous TV actor, you always seem to know who they are. Like in Ellery Queen, for instance, they always have stunt casted, like TV celebrities.
Yeah, well, there are a lot fewer ways to see TV back then. There were basically three, if you were really good, four TV shows, or, I mean, TV stations to have. So
yeah, so it makes more sense that I imagine TV was a pretty small community of actors, made it a lot easier to have in jokes.
Yeah, and those big famous people probably did it just, you know, to get some money between gigs.
So partially that's what I wanted to talk about, just how the cultural relevance of TV changed, and because it seems like that it's kind of said and done that the four channels thing would have been the most truly relevant point, especially no competition from things like video games. But it actually seems like TV just kind of changed its stripes over time. And in fact, there is quite a bit of difference, but it hasn't become less sort of expected of someone to know what's going on TV at any given moment.
Well, that's true. For the most part, it was the three main TV channels, you know, it was ABC, NBC, and CBS. And maybe in a big city like New York or in the New York area, you would have, you maybe could have up to nine stations, but they were all UHF stations.
What's a UHF station?
You could watch them if it wasn't raining. But where I lived, you had three TV stations, ABC, CBS, and NBC, and then basically the local farm reports. It was, you know, UHF station.
What's a UHF?
So UHF. UHF is ultra high frequency, and that just means it's only good for localities.
Okay.
So it all came out of Indianapolis, for instance. But what was really weird was that sometimes in thunderstorms, you had, I forget what the name of the effect is, but I could get UHF TV stations and radio stations from places like New Orleans, but I couldn't get signals from Indianapolis. Because, you know, the ionosphere.
Mm-hmm.
It was very strange. It didn't occur to me at the time that that was strange, but looking back.
So, how did people take advantage of that? What would be getting a like TV show from New Orleans like, if you could get it well enough to watch?
Oh, no, it would just be an accident.
Okay.
And it wouldn't be there very long. You know, it's just kind of like radio cutting in, a radio station, a higher powered radio station cutting in on a low powered station. It wasn't something you could actually plan to do. It was always accidental.
So early on, there were only four channels. How did that affect the relevancy of certain?
Well, as well, you know what was on the three main channels. It was sitcoms and westerns and dramas and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the UHF channels tended to be, during the day, again, where I lived in Indiana, things like farm reports and, you know, a lot of weather, because that mattered in the agricultural country, and reruns of the shows that that we were watching late 50s and 60s. You would still have the Honeymooners and things like that, really early shows that were rerun on UHF and almost never on regular TV.
Yeah, so syndication still took effect. I think some of these shows went on for a really long time, didn't the Rifleman?
I don't know how long the Rifleman was on. It was on a few years. But Lucy, for crying out loud, in various forms, was on for like over 30 years, I think.
I love Lucy was on a really long time. There was one of the Westerns. Was it Gunsmoke?
Gunsmoke, up until just recently, like in the last 5 or 6 years, Gunsmoke was the longest running TV show. It was on over 20 years. And I mean, there wasn't even another show that was past 12 or 13 that I can remember. And I don't know who, I wonder what shows are on now that have been on longer than 20 years, not counting news and all, you know, just primetime shows. I can't think, there have to be some, but I don't know what they are.
The Simpsons.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Animation, yeah.
I think usually they keep pro wrestling in its own category.
Yeah.
Just because that's a much more regular programming. And then, of course, stuff like live shows and pay-per-views.
Yeah, Simpsons and Family Guy. I forgot about them. And South Park? South Park's been on a long time.
South Park is a bit younger than I am. So is Family Guy. Interestingly enough, Detective Conan has also been on that long. 1996. And oh, yeah. It's at continuous airings. I think it's nearing 1,000 episodes.
The really big difference for a hardcore TV watching kid like me back in those days was reruns, because reruns only ran about 3 months out of the year. So you didn't get all of the episodes that you missed. It was hit or miss. So you really had to be dedicated and see every show when it was on, or you might not see it again.
Was it harder to have kids shows back then? Like, were they less common because of how few channels there were?
Well, the kids shows were on in the afternoon. So, you know, from maybe 3 until 5 after school. So it wasn't that big a deal. And they were really cheap. They had them on in the morning for little kids, and then they had them on in the afternoon for older kids, which I would say would be like third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, stuff like that.
Okay, so the model was about the same. It's just later on they could spread it across more channels. So
yeah, and they had an MC, which was, you know, the character who kept things going. And they would just talk a little bit and do, you know, have little kids come up and do stuff between breaks in as they showed cartoons. It was never just like a half hour of these people hanging out with the kids. It was cartoons and breaks where they had kids do stuff. I was one of them, by the way.
Oh, you were.
We all went to a party. I'm trying to remember the name. They had a birthday party that was part of one of those shows, afternoon cartoon show. And they had little games, and I got called up to with two other kids to answer trivia questions. And somehow I answered the trivia question and got a whole box of Reese's candy to take home. And we all ate it on the way home. So I was a TV star there for
that sounds nice.
But sucked. It was the other guy's birthday. We tried to get him to have the birthday boy go up, but they wouldn't have any.
And then what kind of things would they air during prime time?
During prime time?
Yeah.
Now you're talking about just regular TV, not stuff we were just talking about.
Regular
well,
TV.
All the stuff on NBC, CBS, and ABC. That was it.
Well, I'm just curious about I guess stuff that I know that there was a place for, at least eventually, but I'm not sure where it fits. So, where would something like basketball fit versus something like Andy Griffith?
Well, those things, for the most part, unless it was playoffs, sports were relegated primarily to Saturday and Sunday. And if you wanted to pay attention to sports, you, other than Saturday or Sunday, or like the World Series or something, you did it on the radio. You followed it on the radio. Now that's really early. And then when Ted Turner opened up CNN and bought the Atlanta Braves so that he could move them all around the country and lose to all of the teams in the other areas, he made money hand over fist. But by and large, again, ABC, NBC, and CBS had some kind of sports, by and large, on the weekends until the late or the mid to late 70s when they started doing Sunday night football and then Monday night football. Monday night football was the thing that changed it all. The real kicker, though, in terms of primetime TV, since that's what I think we're talking about, was Howard Cosell. That guy was, I mean, he. I don't even know if he was actually even a sports person when this started, but he became this huge major property on ABC. And a lot of people, when I was in college early on, when I went to school at Ball State in fall of 71, I mean, all of the dorms had open spaces and nobody even tried to watch anything but Monday Night Football on any of the TVs. And these people, these students were hardcore football fans, and they loved Howard Cosell.
That's funny to me specifically because when I went to school, there was one big TV. Well, I got there were two in our dorm, and my friend who like just played video games on it was kind of the only person that used it.
Well, yeah, you've all got devices now.
So I guess the other thing I'm curious about was where did the Beverly Hillbillies fit into all of this? Because I know that kind of like family comedy show was popular.
Yeah, shows like that would be on it in the 8 o'clock spot.
Okay, so that would be like
Beverly
an 8 o'clock show.
Hillbillies, and then that got successful, so they had Green Acres, which was rich people going out living among the hillbillies, and then they had all the family shows like Brady Bunch and all that stuff. That the 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock part was family TV. So you had sitcoms, or you had, you know, family, supposed family drama, which was really just kind of saccharine stuff. And then from nine to, and it was almost, I don't think it was by law, but it was by, Family Hour was kind of by agreement of the three major TV stations. And you stuck to it. And so from 8 to 8:30, you'd have a sitcom. And then from 8:30 to 9, you'd have a sitcom, and then everything broke loose after that.
Okay, so I probably partially like maybe self-censorship because a lot of industries kind of got scared into doing that at different
Well, it
points.
was flat out self-censorship.
Yeah, okay. The interesting thing that happened then was the Brady Bunch and Beverly Hillbillies have sort of like a secondary cultural importance in that the cancellation of the Beverly Hillbillies was the first great, like, right-wing culture war talking point. A lot of people used it because a lot of those shows, like Green Acres as well, were replaced with stuff like the New York set shows, like Maude and
Yeah, all in the family.
All in the Family. And a lot of people refer to it as the rural purge that the big wigs didn't like small town America having too much attention or something and tried to destroy their culture.
I don't remember any of that conversation, but that could be. Beverly Hillbillies was on for a long time.
Yeah, it
I
was.
think.
But that was a topic. I imagine it probably wasn't. Because nowadays, whenever anyone gets angry about anything, it seems so much easier to hear about it. Like, the Bill O'Reillys of the time probably couldn't as easily tell you about every single, like, manger scene that gets taken down from a high school, like they can now. But yeah, this was something that people sort of conspiratized about. Though,
Inspired.
yeah. The
Well, then again,
Samuel John Boach stuff.
I can't stress this enough that you had to watch TV when it was on,
Yeah.
right? So it had a much greater impact on your sort of cultural existence on weeknights. So people were much more likely to be staunch supporters or staunch non-supporters to what was going on.
Yeah, and I imagine even though a lot of it was, I think, kind of insane, so much of the disco backlash was because there was a point where it seemed like everything had to be it or not be on the radio.
God.
But don't worry, we'll get to
Disco.
disco.
Yeah, you should have been there for disco.
The
That was the
other.
80s. They're late mid 70s to 80s, right?
Yeah. Because early on it was just like Philly soul music,
Yeah.
which is just sort of the cooler version of like R&B and funk. But
Well, there were discotheques in Indianapolis. When I was at Purdue, I was in a class. Let's see, it was a class with these two girls, set design class. I don't know why they were taking a set design class, but they re reeled me in to help them with their homework. They were twins, and they were the baton twirlers for the football team, the Purdue football team. Big celebs on campus. I got dragged to an Indianapolis disco one night with a bunch of my friends, and they were there. And I went out and said hi to them, and they both looked at me like they'd never seen me before in their lives, which was kind of depressing at the
Yeah.
time.
So I guess since we are talking about it, during the 70s, especially the late 70s, there were a lot of like disco shows
Oh, yeah.
that were just like playing disco while people danced, based on the footage I've watched of them. The big one I think was Soul Train, which
Oh, yeah.
lasted until like 2006.
Soul Train was on for a long time, and there was another one. Well, there was Bandstand way back in the day, American Bandstand, and then, yeah, they just switched over to soul music and disco, yeah. What was that
Now,
guy's name? Really famous guy during that period. I can't remember. On Soul Train, I just can't remember his name.
Soul Train.
Yeah, if you watched, like I have dozens of times, The Last Dragon, that show that the woman was on was kind of a takeoff of Soul Train
Was
in the
it
80s.
Sid McCoy or Maestro
No, that's
Clark?
not right. I can't remember his name. Well,
Don Cornelius? I'm just like looking at the list of hosts and stuff.
Soul Train.
But it's really funny to watch the later ones where there weren't even like disco acts anymore. So it's people like the Beastie Boys and at one point D4L of the famous hit song Laffy Taffy.
Yeah.
But I did
Don
man
Cornelius.
Don Cornelius, yeah.
That was his name. And Rosie Perez.
Oh, of course.
All right, so there's that.
But I did find one that was a lot worse than the others. I think I found probably the most embarrassing of these shows.
It's time for Dance Fever, starring Denny Terrio.
Dance Fever.
The show featuring the country's top disco dancers.
Dance Fever.
This year, competing for cash and prizes worth more than $75,000. With this week's celebrity judge.
Dance Fever.
Actress comedian Mimi Kennedy.
Dance Fever.
From Love Boat, Devin McLeod.
Dance Fever.
Horseshack, from Welcome Back Potter's Ron Palillo. And roller star Johnny Poole. And now, here's Denny.
Dance Fever. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Danny Terrio is big time. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Danny Terrio is big time.
Well, the big feature of Dance Fever were the like guest celebrities, such as Ron Paio of Welcome Back, Carter.
Welcome Back, Carter, right.
And Mimi Kennedy. And Gavin McLeod. But
none, disco like Love Boat.
Yeah, from Love Boat. And none of them wanted to risk embarrassment by dancing themselves in a competition, like Dancing with the Stars.
I'm sure Gavin had some moves.
So instead they just kind of brought them on and did a set where people danced around them. And the people dancing around them were in the competition.
God, TV, so that, see, you can get away with that when you only have three or four channels.
This is the true danger of Monopoly.
I know. Well, and Saturday Night Live was even worse when it first came on. I mean, that was group watching. You went to somebody, you didn't sit and watch Saturday Night Live at home. You went to somebody else's house with all your friends and watched it.
It was like a boxing match.
I don't know. I was never into boxing.
Oh, I just mean because those were, like, pay-per-views. You'd usually have viewing parties together, so you could just pool the money to pay for it.
Yeah, but Saturday Night Live was TV shows.
I know, I just mean you'd watch it as a group. Yeah, maybe like a football game.
When I watched Dooku Kim actually get killed in the ring.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's not something you want to see.
Even otherwise, one day you suddenly go up to a Texas tower and start shooting people.
That was the premise upon which we based this program tonight. The last time you were here, I think we were talking about Star Trek. And we talked about how difficult it is for a creative person, be it writer, producer, director, actor sometimes, to sell his or her services to the television networks. And so let's talk about some difficulties you've had.
I had some difficulties in that program. Star Trek people are like fundamentalists, man. I mean,
yes, evangelistic.
Oh, they're terrifying. And they even went and told Gene Roddenberry that I had badmouthed him. And Gene hadn't seen the show, so he didn't know. And until he found out better, I didn't badmouth Gene. Gene's a friend. And what I said was that Paramount was driving him crazy the same as they were driving me crazy. But, I got letters telling me to, you know, cut my throat, and I was a terrible human being and all sorts of wonderful things.
Mm-hmm. But at the time, we talked about vice presidents and other assorted network executives, be it here or across the street, who sometimes have difficulty understanding the creative thrust of a television series.
Well, they're not writers. They don't understand plot. They don't understand story. They'll tell you, you write a script, you spend 3 months writing a script, and you hand it in, and they'll suddenly say something to you like, let's change the hero to a woman. And you begin to tremble, and you say, well, but you can't. Oh, it's just a fix. You can fix that on a weekend. They don't realize that you have to go, you know, people don't think alike. And if you make a man into a woman or vice versa, you've got to alter everything.
Do you think that the network television industry itself is in some kind of trouble, especially in the primetime hours? And the reason I ask that,
absolutely,
there was an article in one of the trade papers the other day about the growing trend towards syndication instead of the networks. Peter Marshall is doing a syndicated show for Westinghouse. Andy Williams is doing a syndicated show for Pierre Cossette Productions.
So I think the big change for TV regaining relevance was probably the, like, Oz Sopranos era, where HBO started making the, like, big shows that people were expected to watch.
Yeah, HBO had a big effect on network TV, definitely.
Which is, by the way, right about the time when they got rid of that family hour rule, which was, again, set by law. They got rid of that, and so people put stuff on anytime they wanted.
Yeah, and even though there were shows that were respected for a long time, like Hill Street Blues, Roots mm-hmm. was obviously well, that was huge.
A great show.
In Italy, there was a very long-running gangster show called The Octopus, and that was from like the 80s. So there were shows like that. In Britain, they had a lot of government mandated like TV films.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of those that were big. Edge of Darkness, I think it's called, The Singing Detective. But when The Sopranos came out, and then eventually you just started getting all these different shows that were trying to be like the big thing. Which continues to now with stuff like Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Which
isn't on broadcast TV.
No, it's not. But so
that was a big thing about The Sopranos. You didn't have to sign up for anything to watch it.
Well, you do now.
I know.
Which is kind of the funny thing about... Well, I just mean in general. It's funny now.
And the really big thing back at that point was Roots.
Well, Roots was like the 70s.
It only had a certain... run, but you had to watch it when it was on, and people watched it like manically. It was like shut down the other two networks for that hour.
Yeah, wasn't that around the same time as Star Wars?
I don't remember. It was in the '80s, I think, wasn't it, or late '70s?
Yep, 1977.
I was working on a play back then, and I never watched it because it was during play practice. I can't remember the name. Yeah, that's about right, 77.
And then now everything's like we've gone back to having four channels, but instead of four channels, it's four streaming services
mm-hmm.
that have all the shows and then make their own.
Yeah, but you don't have to watch them when
they're on. Well, that's the other thing. So Relevance is maintained now, but the idea is to watch shows all at once.
Yeah.
In order to keep up with them. And they all get released at once, and they're basically just like, you know, 13-hour movies.
Yeah.
I'm not good at keeping up with them. I honestly, and I think you agree with me, I don't really like them a lot of the time.
But stuff gets old. See, again, whenever you, that's the thing. I hate to even keep going back to it, but it's true. If you can watch it anytime you want, you get disinterested in watching it.
Yeah.
By you, I mean me.
Well, I also think stuff like Dexter, I think a lot of it's kind of gotten into this House of Cards, where it sort of goes so hard in on the anti-hero aesthetic, and it's so much about it is just like trying to top how bad the main character is.
Yeah,
but like none of it ever reaches the point of being, say, Taxi Driver, which I think because it was only like an hour and 50 minutes.
Yeah, Dexter came close.
Was a much more well, I just mean in terms of quality.
Yeah.
Sort of explosive thing. And much more just like, I guess, visceral. He seemed like a real, like, just mentally unstable, reactionary person. Whereas Dexter is like a super intelligent detective serial killer. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like they kind of veer off the genres they had before, but not that much. And then they just kind of like try to coat it with a lot of sort of just bad actions on the characters. They try to turn everything.
They want
to
have it both ways. They want to have a guy who's a serial killer, but a good guy.
Yeah, it's like if everything tries to just be Clint Eastwood movies from like the 60s.
Well, and if given our conversation that we've just had, you can see why I'm the way I am, which, by the way, drives your sister crazy, which is I root for the good guys. Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't watch Dexter because Dexter's a bad guy. I don't care if he's the head of the show. He's a serial killer. He's not a good guy. There was a big distinction between good guys and bad guys the whole time I was growing up. And that's the way I sort of just grew up. And that's the way I still am.
Yeah. I mean, even I'm definitely not in that group. I'm used to watching stuff where the bad guy is the protagonist, but I just feel like it's so much of the stuff now.
Oh, I did. That's why I didn't watch The Sopranos. I watched the first couple of episodes and I thought, who am I supposed to root for here?
Another one was Sons of Anarchy, which had nothing but actors I really like in it. But the other problem with those shows is that they're so long, they're 40 minutes an episode, and they're a continuous story. So, 5 minutes at the end and beginning of each episode is when 90% of the stuff happens.
Yeah, I got into that for a little while, but it kind of started being the same thing. Who am I rooting for in this show?
10 days later, I got about 400,000 pan letters. Not fan letters, pan letters, and blaming me. We'll never watch you again, Uncle Milty, when you put that vulgar man that jives and wiggles his backside and his butt. It's disgusting. Oh, the pan letters get worse, and they're blaming me. Who else? I got a 500,000. I had to put people on to open them. 500,000 letters on them, blaming me about Presley. Without a butt, you could just turn around. I got on the phone and I called Colonel Parker. I said, I have in front of me here in the office, oh, hundreds of thousands of letters. Oh, he's about Elvis? I said, yeah, but they're all pan letters. They're not, what do you mean pan letters? I said, all I called.
The big performances I had were, I can't remember the name of that show, but the Beatles performed on one of those big.
The Ed Sullivan Show.
Ed Sullivan Show. And I think there were a couple controversial Ed Sullivan performances. The Beatles were the most popular one. But didn't they get, hate mail for Elvis?
That, again, was a night that everybody in the country, practically, who had a TV, was watching the Ed Sullivan Show on Sunday night. He probably had, 80% of the viewing audience. And they had pretty much the whole show.
Yeah, and it's very inappropriate. I don't approve of their haircuts.
My parents didn't either. But my father did take us all to see the Beatles when they came to Indianapolis. And he was our hero again.
That's good.
We were only able to hear the music because we were way up in the back underneath the speaker. And if you were down close, you couldn't even hear him because the crowd screamed the entire time.
So loud, yeah.
It was bizarre.
And then you and I have a disagreement about this. I think
you're probably wrong.
Well, I think the Beach Boys lip-synced a lot of those performances on TV. I don't think those were real performances. Well, also they're a very production-heavy band. There's a reason why the Beatles had to stop touring during Abbey Road and stuff. It was kind of studio heavy albums, and in the case of the Beach Boys, it was a lot of Phil Spector and Brian Wilson. One of the other controversial ones besides Elvis was the Doors, who were explicitly told to censor their lyrics and then didn't after promising to, and they got in a lot of trouble talking about getting high and stuff.
They did. And when that happened, they were coming to Indianapolis and they got canceled. The city canceled them.
Yeah.
A lot of towns did.
And
he did some weird sex thing on stage.
Yeah, that too. He had a very particular way of performing.
Yeah.
Let's say. And then, interestingly enough,
the phrase "touch me, babe."
Yeah. Can't get much higher, that sort of stuff. Among the more, I guess not recent ones. Well, I mean, the most recent one that I think everyone had to see was Kanye interrupting Taylor Swift.
Oh, that was ridiculous. I think that was staged, by the way. I don't think she was in on it, but I think it was definitely staged.
She may have been on it.
It's possible.
As we found out following the release of this other song he made that was another one, like, cycle of saying stuff about how, you know, how could he say that about Taylor? That's so horrifying. And then audio got leaked of them talking about it ahead of time on the phone and him making sure everything was okay and that, you know, it was fine that he said all this stuff. And they were, like, clearly just doing this back and forth to keep their releases in conversation.
Yes. Well, we've had arguments about Kanye the whole time.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't really deny that he's just, like, an absurd person who's completely wrapped up in his own head, to a massive detriment to just about everyone around him. But I think some of his albums are good, which...
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, again, Phil Spector is probably a worse person.
Phil Spector, as bad as he is, who is the name of the guy down who owned the Grand Ole Opry all those years ago? The whole Southern country and Western thing is not, you know, I can't remember his name, but he put Phil Spector to shame in terms of being somebody who just ran rampant.
Well, Phil Spector murdered someone.
Okay, well, he didn't kill anybody that I'm aware of.
Item seven, November 29, 3 p.m. Conflict resolution seminar in this room. Attendance mandatory. You got a conflict with that?
Yeah, I do.
It's resolved. You're going. Item eight. Officer Quinn returns to active duty roster tomorrow. So, Yeager, you'll ride with Cerruto.
Oh, Lieutenant, give me a break. Yeager's got yak breath. I can't ride with him.
So wear a gas mask. Item last, on the teletype, we still got the Franklin Avenue flasher. Struck at two outdoor weddings and a school picnic so far this month. Male cock, 6'3". Look for tattoos in unusual places. Okay, that's it. And hey. Let's be careful out there. Let's be careful out there. We had a 187 at the 7-Eleven on the corner of 4th and Main. Two Caucasians of the male persuasion put a bullet through the cashier's brain. GTA, civil miscellaneous crimes. Homicide, arson, robbery, rape, everybody gets a share. Crime never sleeps, so stay awake. Let's be careful out there. Market Robin Hood. He's been stealing from the stores and giving to the poor. He's a hero of the neighborhood. Homicide, arson, robbery, rape. It wouldn't hurt to say our prayer. Play it tough, but play it straight. And let's be careful out there.
The other great thing about Cop Rock is the fact that It's terribly undiegetic, which means it can't explain where its music's coming from. Well, it does, but it doesn't make sense in universe. So either they can start singing and just kind of go along with it, or they can have, like, bands playing in the scene or something. But with Cop Rock, they'll just start singing and then, like, reveal that their podium is actually a keyboard.
Yeah, it's like a musical. It's bizarre. Only it sucked.
Yeah, that was the other thing. It was meant to be, like, an actual show for some reason, apparently. And that,
yeah, that was it. It seemed like they took it seriously.
So other than the hilarious, like, the really funny, other than the hilarious musical numbers, the show is just, like, a really bad, boring cop show. Like, it's just a very basic, uninteresting cop show.
Maybe they made the pilot and saw how much it sucked, but remembered how much money they spent on it and thought, you know, maybe we should throw some music into this. The crowd will love it.
Oh, they'll love it.
It sucked. I couldn't get through the first episode.
Especially like this number I found, He's Guilty, where they sing about how they're going to like sentence a guy to 20 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
We have no context on who this guy is. This just feels rude. But they're really gloating that this guy's going to jail.
And what was the song?
He's Guilty.
Oh.
So
it's like Glee, except at the precinct.
Yeah. Well, Glee was another show that was, I don't know how popular it was. It's harder to tell now, because
Glee was extremely popular when it came out.
Yeah. Early on, I think it was trying to be like an anti-high school show. Like, so much of what it did was kind of 30 Rock self-aware weirdness.
Yeah, it was irreverent.
Like, there were a bunch of people faking pregnancies. And, like, it took all the same stuff from a teen show, but
and one of the teachers was a stoner.
The football team was terrible.
Yeah.
And
it was fun the first year or so, though.
Yeah. And then after that, it just became, like, an actual teen show. And then it became a show that tried to, like, be about something. Like, they'd just take any well, it turned into Law and Order. They just take news stories and, like, inject them into the plot.
Yeah, and then they moved to New York, for crying out loud.
Oh, yeah, they moved to New York and had a giant loft.
From, by the way, Lima, Ohio, which is where I was born.
That's good. So
that's probably why they picked it.
Because you made it to New York.
That's right.
And now you live in a giant loft, despite being a student. Those classic, yeah, like, midtown, you know, 300-foot yeah, lofts well, that have a kitchen.
Everybody on TV who lives in New York does better than they actually should.
Except maybe Seinfeld. I'm pretty sure he was that big at the time.
Probably.
Well, the funny thing with all the other characters in Seinfeld was that they lived the same way, but they were all just, like, hucksters. So,
well, the friends could never have afforded where they live.
Yeah. That was always kind of the funny thing. They just kind of, like, weaseled their way into good living. The other thing, other than having, like, insane, like, school shooting episodes, Glee also started doing incredibly weird theme episodes. Early on, they tried to make the songs about the plot, but then they just kind of picked the songs and went from there.
Yeah.
For instance,
they need to run shows like they do on Netflix sometimes. If Glee had just been the first year,
mm-hmm.
maybe the first 2 years, and stopped, it would have been remembered as a really creative show.
Yeah, it would have been, like, fine. Mm-hmm. But then they did stuff like dynamic duets, where all the characters dress up yeah. like superheroes and do duets together, including one where two of them dress up like Superman and then sing at the same girl about how they're Superman.
And what was the irony of that? That the girl who replaced, what's her name?
Later became
Supergirl.
That's who they were singing to, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so eventually she became Supergirl, really supplanting both of them.
She's good at it, too.
Isn't MS a degenerative nerve disease? I thought it was a girl's magazine. If you go a million miles away, I'll track you down, girl. Trust me when I say I know the pathway to your heart.
Hey, what are you doing? Hey, stop it.
Hi, so there really wasn't an ending planned for this one. Originally, I wanted to do a brief section on MTV, but the clips I pulled for it weren't very good, and I didn't actually research much about stuff like TOL or the Unplugged material to have all that much to talk about. So I figure if I'm going to ever talk about it, I should set that aside for its own episode. Because of that, there's no real ending to this. Thanks, Barry, my dad, for showing up and talking about this stuff. I just kind of got a random inkling to record this episode with him about TV, since I was just curious on the topic of what it was like before, what I came into, because I came in right at the start of things like TiVo and DVR, so I really liked getting to hear about what it was like to try to follow this stuff as it was happening. Next time will be a normal episode with Shane again. We're getting back on to the weird crap I can find. The book about, what's his name, the book about Art Pepper that James Chance talked about in one of the interviews, I managed to get that. I've started reading it. Jesus Christ, that guy is something else. Even compared to the stuff I've talked about so far, that guy is something else. So, look forward to that. This was meant to be just kind of a small B-side that ended up having more length to it than I thought it would, but I don't think it's so bad.